Welcome to the Caris Molecular Minute Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Shadi Nabhan. I'm the chairman of the Caris Precision Oncology Alliance, the large research collaborative network focused on precision oncology research, biomarker research, data-driven research, with the ultimate goal of all of us working together to improve the outcomes of all patients affected with cancer. It is October 2023, and it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I couldn't be more privileged, honored, and happy to host Janine Cervoni, my colleague and friend who works with me and with us all here at Caris Life Sciences in commercial education. I learned a lot from Janine over the past several years I have been at Caris, but most importantly about her perseverance, tenacity, and her ability to navigate a very difficult problem she faced a couple of years ago when she was diagnosed with breast cancer during the COVID-19 pandemic. I asked Janine to join me on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast to talk about her journey, to talk about this diagnosis, and to talk about how a patient can navigate a complex healthcare system and eventually becomes an advocate, helping other people affected with this disease. Please subscribe to the Caris Molecular Minute podcast, rate the show, and write a brief review. I appreciate your support. You can always let me know how we are doing by emailing me at cnabhan@carisls.com or by direct messaging me on Twitter at Shadi Nabhan. Without further ado, a journey of a breast cancer patient on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. Let's get started by getting to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about who you are, your background, and how did you end up working at Caris?
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here. So I have been with Caris for about 10 years now. Before I joined Caris, I worked at Johnson & Johnson, and I was in their oncology division that focused on circulating tumor cells and doing profiling of circulating tumor cells. So, similar to what we're doing today. And my former manager over there recruited me over here to Caris and said, hey, we need a trainer and I'd love to have you. So I came on board to Caris about 10 years ago. I've been in commercial education since the time I started. I love being in this field. 10 years has flown by. It doesn't seem like 10 years because I'm constantly learning. What we were talking about 10 years ago, what we were talking about 2 years ago is so different than what I'm teaching people today. So that's what I love about being in this space is it keeps it interesting because I'm constantly having to learn myself to teach others. And I love that not just for my job, but also because I myself had cancer. I've had friends with cancer, family members. So being able to help them as they go through the journey, I want to make sure that I keep my knowledge, up to speed with the latest and greatest in the oncology world. So that's a little bit about me.
And I learn a lot from you, actually, Janine. I really appreciate everything that you do. And I constantly learn from you. But how do you keep up? There's so much information out there. Mm-hmm. How do you keep up and you stay current?
One thing that I've done that whether you work in this field or you're just a patient who's interested, you can go and sign up for emails. There's, you can sign up with ASCO, you can sign up with NCCN, all different OncLive, different educational resources out there where they will send you, automatic email updates when there's new therapies that are approved or new updates to guidelines. So that I can keep myself educated on things that are happening and changing every single day. I'm lucky enough to work for Caris and have internal resources that help to keep me updated. But I think, as a patient, there's just so much online. So being able to just get online and read. And I think the important message that I always tell friends and family when they're diagnosed with cancer is not necessarily to focus on reading blogs, and of one situations, because a lot of times those are worst case scenario and somebody's writing about a terrible experience they had, but read the reputable sources that are out there. Make sure the information that you're getting is good.
So Janine, you're living your life. Everything was normal, normal to an extent because we were in the middle of COVID-19 and something happened. Take us back to that day.
So it was during the pandemic. It was in February and I was at a national meeting for Caris. Right after the national meeting, I had an appointment for just my annual mammogram and ultrasound. And I always got ultrasounds because I have very dense breasts. So the recommendation is to always get both. Prior to this mammogram and ultrasound that I was having, I had been going to my doctor. And at the time I lived in New York, I had gone to my primary care doctor about a year prior. And because I felt a lump in my right breast, she said, well, you know, it didn't feel very worrisome to her. So she said, just monitor it. If it changes, come back to me. And, you know, I think that's another piece of advice for patients is don't be afraid to go back to your doctor multiple times, because if something changes, they do want to know. And don't think just because the first time it was nothing, that it's nothing. So I went back and I did tell her, you know, a few months later, I feel that it's changing. I have more lumps now. And so she did the right thing. She sent me for some imaging, but the imaging did not show my cancer. They did a mammogram. They did an ultrasound. Saw nothing. So they told me just to, you know, give it time, come back. Actually, I'm sorry. I take that back. The person who did the mammogram said, we're going to send you over to the breast cancer center, to meet with the surgeon there, because he may want to biopsy it because it was palpable. It was something we could feel. And so she thought, well, maybe they'll want to biopsy it because we can't see anything on imaging. So we don't know what we're dealing with. When I went to the breast cancer center, I actually met with the NP there, who again, didn't think it felt worrisome. So she told me to come back in 3 months. I did go back in 3 months. And again, she thought based on my age, I was going to be turning 40. She thought it was just fibrous, normal changes that were happening in my breast. I said, okay. So she said, when you turn 40, that's when people typically start their imaging. I had already had some baseline imaging because of these concerns. So she said, go back when you turn 40 and let's get another image then to compare. And so by that point, I had moved to South Carolina. I went to a new doctor for my imaging. And lo and behold, I had two little spots show up on the ultrasound that looked cancerous. So they did biopsy them. And they were cancer. Again, it was two little spots. So they sent me for an MRI. And the MRI ended up showing the full extent of the tumor. The tumor was actually 8 centimeters. So it was very large. I had 3 abnormal lymph nodes. Long story short, the reason it hadn't showed up on imaging was because I had lobular cancer. And again, going back to how I learn, I did get online and started doing research. My cancer was lobular breast cancer. And almost from some of the studies that I read, almost 100% of the time, lobular breast cancer is missed on imaging. So it blends with the breast tissue. So it wasn't showing up. It didn't feel like that typical round, hard mass. It felt more like dense ridges in my breast. And so ultimately it was cancer, and we proceeded forward with chemo to shrink it. And then we did surgery and then radiation.
You know, Janine, it's you know, the human nature always assumes that it never is going to happen to us. It's mm-hmm. going to happen to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Especially at your age. Obviously, you're a very young woman, and you know, it's not something that you would expect. I guess the first thing that comes to mind, you know, I don't need to tell you if you're overwhelmed, because you obviously, all of us would be overwhelmed. As human beings, we would be overwhelmed. But my question is, when this actually happens, where do you go to resources? Because two things. You don't represent the typical phenotype of a patient because you're well educated, you live in that space, so you really have resources that others don't have. Mm-hmm. So for someone like yourself, how do you research so much information and to focus on you at hand? And then put yourself in the shoes of someone who is just not in the medical field, you know, mm-hmm. and how can they actually go in and try to learn about their disease, because there's so much noise out there, and sometimes it gets challenging separating signal from noise.
Yeah, I would agree. So as you said, I had the benefit. I was blessed to be able to reach out to yourself and others here at Caris because I was very overwhelmed. Although you said it, you know, you never think it's going to be you. The funny thing is, for years training here at Caris, I would tell new hires, you know, it's cancer is a disease of the aging. And at some point, if you don't already, you're going to know somebody with cancer, whether it's you, a loved one, a friend. And I would always say that, you know, somebody that we work with here at Caris is going to have cancer, right? And it's going to really hit home. Well, that ended up being me. So it was just ironic because I had said that for a long time. And so I wasn't necessarily shocked because I had time over the course of that year to kind of wrap my head around this could be cancer because I had been feeling it and feeling it and feeling it, right? Feeling it growing. So I wasn't shocked, but where I was more overwhelmed was the road ahead, right? Now that I have this diagnosis, to your point, where do I learn about the road ahead? Because although I'm knowledgeable about molecular profiling and that side of things, I wasn't as knowledgeable about the patient journey and how that would feel and how much time that takes and side effects that I would experience and all that sort of stuff, how to communicate it to my children. You know, what other testing should I have done? I knew I wanted Caris testing done, but did I need genetic testing? Did I need recurrence testing done? Did I need any of that? You know, and although I trust my doctor, I'm the type of patient that wants to really understand what's being ordered for me. Why? Is there something else that I need? I was able to ask you and others about all of that, but I think, you know, a lot of my friends that have had cancer, family members, they come to me to ask that advice. If you don't have those sort of resources in your life, my suggestion would be to ask your doctor or ask the staff at their office, because they can point you in the right direction to resources. Every cancer center typically has groups of, in my case, there was a breast cancer group of other women like me that met on a regular cadence to talk about their experiences, what they learned, where they learned it. So I think that's one option. You know, other options, they have patient advocates. The patient advocates, everybody was assigned one at the cancer center I went to. So I had my own patient advocate. And if she couldn't answer my question, she would put me in touch with somebody who could. So I think as a patient, asking those questions of, you know, who do I go to? Who's my patient advocate? And asking your patient advocate, who do I go to? I want to better understand this. Because doctors do their best to educate, but they also don't have unlimited amounts of time to sit there with you, right? And so we need these other resources to help us have that peace of mind, to know about what we're going through. I think for patients like me, knowing what the road ahead was going to entail, that helped me to have some calmness as I moved forward, knowing what to expect.
Did you feel that social media in general helps in this, whether it is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, things of that? There's a lot out there. Obviously, it's not peer reviewed or monitored, but how did you utilize social media, if any, to your benefit as a patient?
Yeah. You know, I didn't use social media too much in my journey. Other than, you know, I would occasionally post pictures of me and my children because, you know, my concern was I didn't know how I was going to make out. You know, I didn't know if I was going to tolerate the treatment well. And, you know, to be cured or in remission of your cancer, you have to respond to the treatment, right? And so going into that, I didn't know if I'd respond or if my cancer would progress. And so I wanted to make sure that during that time, I wasn't neglecting still living my life and having experiences with my children and posting those experiences on my Facebook page for my family members that I don't live around any of my family. So that was always how I communicated with my family, what we were doing and the fun things my children and I were doing. So I continued to post that stuff on social media. And even when I had a bald head, I had no hair. And, you know, I didn't shy away from pictures because I wanted my kids to have these pictures of us during this time. And next thing you know, when I would look at that picture, it was blown up with comments below it, you know, and I think for me, that support, that helped, you know, knowing I had all these people thinking about me, rooting for me, it helped me stay positive. So I think that was more how I used it, was for the support than for education. I didn't use it so much for that.
You know, we oftentimes, Jean, we talk about how, you know, there's like, you know, 10 breast cancers within breast cancer, that when you say breast cancer, all what you are saying, it originated from the breast. But there are so many, you know, based on the markers and the genetic testing. So I guess the two questions I have for you, how did you discuss molecular profiling with your physician? Did she bring it up? Did you bring it up? And number two, in terms of the germline testing at your age, was that also discussed or not discussed?
I brought it up to my clinician because obviously that's what I do for a living is work here for Caris. And so it's always forefront of mind. But I was stage 3B. And stage 3B didn't necessarily indicate that I would need profiling because there's standard of care treatment. But knowing, you know, what I know, I still wanted the profiling. So should that standard of care not work for me, we could look at that report and identify better options. So I did ask for it. And my doctor was very open to it. She said, absolutely. And that day, you know, she filled out the paperwork and got the order placed. And I couldn't be more thankful that we did, because in the end, the lab that had diagnosed me when they first did the biopsies, they called it lobular breast cancer. So from what they saw through the microscope, it looked like lobular cells. When the cancer center that I was going to, when that lab looked at the tissue that was sent over to them, they said it was ductal with lobular features. Ductal with lobular features, from reading that I've done, should be treated like lobular breast cancer. They're more similar in how they respond and how they behave. And so it was important that my doctors were treating me as a lobular breast cancer patient, not a ductal breast cancer patient. Well, my surgeon was treating me as ductal based on that report, because when he saw ductal with lobular features, he thought I was ductal breast cancer. So he started treating me based on that. And so now I have one lab basically saying ductal, one saying lobular. So Caris became the tiebreaker. And so when they looked at my cells, they said, we think 1,000% it's lobular. And here's why. And they actually gave me a study to back up that my cancer, the cells looked lobular, but I had a unique biomarker that wasn't typical in lobular cancer. It was more common in ductal, which is why the other lab was thinking it was ductal. But that biomarker that I had that wasn't typical, it does appear 17% of the time in lobular cancer. So I was just a very unique, rare case where it was lobular, but with this unique biomarker in it. It took Caris and that report and sharing that with my surgeon to get everybody at the cancer center, my whole treatment team, aligned to the fact that I was lobular. And so that didn't impact necessarily the standard of care treatment that I received, the chemos that I received, but it did impact my decision on the type of surgery I wanted to have, because lobular does have a little bit higher recurrence rate or risk of, I should say, appearing in the other breast. So I decided to have a double mastectomy instead of just a single-sided mastectomy. It did also impact my oncologist, her decision on what therapy to give me post all of that. So I'm now on aromatase inhibitors because they're shown to be more effective in lobular than ductal. So there is, to your point, there are so many different subtypes of breast cancer. And that's where the Caris testing really came into play for me, was, you know, it was the tiebreaker, because looking at this tissue, again, it's subjective. And so sometimes it's good to get those second opinions and have multiple eyes on your case to figure out what's the right path ahead for you.
Jeanine, how did your experience shape two things? One, what you do day in and day out here, Caris, in terms of your job, which is, again, educating all of us. And number two, educating non-Caris people, whether it's neighbors, relatives. I guess, how did this experience transform you from the patient to the advocate?
Since I, you know, went through this journey myself, I have had so many phone calls and coffee meetings over coffee with others that I either know from like growing up with individuals or people that have been referred to me through colleagues at work. Like, you know, I had a phone call this morning, a colleague said, my neighbor has cancer. Would you mind talking to her? And so just being available, making myself available to talk to people who are going through the journey, because to your point, I know a lot about it. And that knowledge to me was power. The knowledge, as I said, helped keep me calm because I knew what I had to do, right? What I had to do to beat this and to go through the journey. So I like to help others feel more comfortable with what to expect and give them a sounding board, just someone to talk to if they're scared or nervous or have questions. You know, I personally have just done a lot of one-on-ones with people. I also go out of my way to share with people, you know, females that are having their annual mammograms, that if you feel something, to the last question, there are a lot of subtypes. So do your monthly self-exams. And if you feel it changing, it's important to let your doctor know. Mammograms are not the best. Ultrasounds are a little better, but they're still not perfect. So be your own self-advocate. Trust your gut. If you feel something, there's no shame in going back to your doctor a second time on the same thing and asking again.
You said perfectly, be your own self-advocate. But the other thing is you mentioned, which really resonates very well, the most important gift that we can give people sometimes is time and listening.
Yeah.
And in a world that is so fast-paced, sometimes we don't pause and just listen. And unfortunately, professionals and healthcare providers and physicians are so busy, and sometimes it's really affect us. I can tell you, you inspire us all. I'm very fortunate to call you a dear friend and a colleague. But before I let you go, any final thoughts you want to leave folks who are listening to this podcast as we are airing this in Breast Cancer Awareness Month?
Just, you know, again, I feel honored that you asked me to come on here and talk about my journey. But I think the takeaways, I don't want this to be, you know, about my journey. Every journey is unique. And so I think, as you just said, you know, what I would want people to walk away with is don't ever be afraid to ask questions. Don't be shy. You know, don't hesitate to be your own advocate. Don't ever feel like you're bothering your doctor. That's never how you should feel. Ask the questions that you have. It's going to help you as you go through that journey, feeling more comfortable.
And if your doctor complains about your questions, get another doctor.
Yeah. Good point.
Janine Cervoni, thank you so much for coming on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate your support. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, rate the show, and write a brief review. Refer your friends and colleagues to the show, and let me know how I'm doing by sending me an email at cnabhan@carisls.com or by direct messaging me on Twitter @ShadiNabhan. Thank you to my guest, Janine Cervoni, for being on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. And until next time, take care.